Hey, welcome to the Energy Question with David Blackman. I'm your host, David Blackman, and my very special guest today is Susan Combs, a former Texas state legislator, agriculture commissioner in Texas, and former state comptroller, and who also served as assistant secretary for policy at the Interior Department during the Trump administration. Susan is also today currently on the board of advisors for the Carbon Neutral Coalition. We're going to make that the topic of our discussion today. Susan, thank you so much for agreeing to do this with me.
Well, thank you, David. It's great to be able to talk. You know, these Zoom things work great for having a good discussion. You can see people, and it's very helpful. So thanks.
It really is. This technology is so miraculous to me. And I guess it may be we can say it's one of the very few positive things that evolved out of the COVID pandemic and all the crazy response our government had to that.
Yep.
So let's get started. I want to talk to you about the Carbon Neutral Coalition. It's I interviewed Sean Strawbridge on this similar subject last November. Sean, of course, is the CEO at the Port of Corpus Christi. First of all, talk about the board of advisors for this coalition. It's such an impressive board that I'm just thrilled when Lauren Luxenberg got in touch with me last year to talk on this subject.
Well, Corby Robertson set it up, and then he wanted to have a very diverse board, which I thought was really good. A, because it gives you lots of viewpoints, but B, because you get this whole body of knowledge from people where you may not have known about pipelines, or you may not know about storage, or you may not have known about forestry. So we have cattle raisers on there. We have the Farm Bureau on there. We have a former Supreme Court justice on there. We have Sean Strawbridge on the Corpus Christi. We have Ken Medlock from the Baker Institute at Rice. Well known. We have Chuck McConnell from U of H, who really has been very, very helpful. We've got about 35 or 40. It's very, very diverse. And we split those into four committees. The first one is carbon capture, utilization, storage. And that is chaired by Elizabeth Coleman. She was a former railroad commissioner. And then we have methane, which is chaired by Will Robertson, who is Corby's son and very knowledgeable. We have offsets, chaired by Jim Blackburn from the B Carbon Protocol, which is housed at Rice. And then we have Chuck McConnell, who chairs the futures. And so we get it's a really nice group, and it's very diverse, and we get lots of good input.
And the coalition is there to advocate for strong policy promoting Texas's energy security and really the country's energy security around these four main topics, correct?
And the underlying principle is that what Corby said was, look, we want to get Texas to being carbon neutral by 2050, comma. And in order to get there, what you have to do is you have to have a carbon capture market. You have to have a robust environment to make that happen. And with all the stuff coming from Wall Street and all the stuff coming from the administration, there's a kind of a chill in the air. So what we're advocating for are incentives. And one on property tax, if you do some pollution control, you get a property tax, franchise tax, and then one on TERP, the Texas Emissions Reduction Plan, which has been for vehicles, and we want to expand that. And then there's one about liability. The Texans for Lawsuit Reform Foundation took a look at the liability issues. And but beyond that, we're sort of doing like what you do. You've got energy podcasts. We're doing videos, and we're doing op-eds, and we're doing things like this, and we're writing, and we keep tweaking the website. What has been interesting to me is the fact that there's not much volume of information or speech or advocacy coming from some of the people who are the big players in the industry. And they really have a lot of things to talk about in a very positive way. So we're trying to amplify that, kind of megaphone it, because we think it's so important.
Well, you know, it is very important, and it's such an enormous opportunity when you really look at, for example, the carbon capture piece of this, the amount of pore space available to house the captured carbon along the Texas and the Louisiana Gulf Coast is really the majority of the available opportunity in the country, isn't it?
Yes. And in fact, the General Land Office office also has land underwater, and they're very interested and engaged. And we just got a bill filed to help Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. Just got that filed on Tuesday afternoon to let them actually engage in this. There is a large project coming, and this is to your point about the Texas Gulf Coast. There's a group that wants to invest $500 million over an unspecified number of years to do what I would call sort of living landscapes, on the ocean, Gulf, for 250 miles of Texas's coast. And Parks and Wildlife has about 60 miles of that. And it's a short bill, two-page bill. And I'm touch wood, hope it happens, because with the coastline itself, the underground storage underwater, the underground caverns under places like, you know, these large South Texas ranches,
right,
many, many vehicles. We also have a lot of pipelines, which is so ironic. Think about the Ohio Railroad disaster and railroads. And I'm going to read you this. It was on Monday, the chair of the National Transportation Safety Board, Jennifer Homender, she specifically said that pipelines were a whole lot safer than railroads in transporting stuff. And I thought, go Jennifer. I mean, I'm not on first name terms with her, but go Jennifer, because I thought, yes, that's what you've been saying. And so I was talking to Chuck McConnell about this, and he's a great guy. You ought to get him on your program. Chuck was pointing out that you have all of the federal FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which should be saying, yes, look, we just get these pipelines. You've got the Senate in uproar today, you know, grilling these poor guys looking like, you know, deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
If you're going to do carbon capture, you have to extract it or capture it. You have to move it. You got to dump it. You got to or use it. And we need to be, you know, promoting more pipelines because they're safer.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I wish she'd have spoken up on the first day of the Biden administration when the president canceled the Keystone XL pipeline. And as a result, we're bringing all that crude in from Canada on trucks and trains. But it's good to know the administration seems to be evolving in that view. We're recording this during CERA week. And one of the things I've been gratified to see, number one, was some positive comments about the industry from Energy Secretary Granholm on Wednesday. And then the second thing is the very robust discussion at CERA week now about CCS and the future for CCS. And it's just such a natural fit. I've always viewed this as high potential for the oil and gas industry, because it's such a natural fit with the current expertise these companies have on staff, isn't it? It's really phenomenal.
Well, and it's in their best interest, especially when you have an offset credit market.
Yeah.
And then if you capture this, you can use some of this captured CO2, you know, for cement and plastics and various other things, so you can have an end game. And one of the things that Chuck has been talking about, McConnell, on the futures market is, look, we decided to name it the Futures Committee. Is that it's not going to be confined to hydrogen. And we have about almost 900,000 energy-related jobs in the state of Texas. And I've got a number that says, you know, if we get to CCUS and we get to see these various things, we would expect annual new jobs of 18,350 over a 15-year period, and then about 9,200 and plus for ongoing operations. So to that end, the Texas Workforce Commission has set aside $38 million into what they were doing, sort of this middle skills arena, where you're going to have these new technologies, new things needed, and you have a skills gap. And so their chairman is a very smart guy named Brian Daniel. And I think he's going to be advocating this session, he can't lobby, but they'll be talking about what's the gap. And I think Chuck and the U of H people are very convinced that there's a really robust opportunity for Texas to grow and expand as we transform. That's the word I prefer. As we transform and expand our opportunities to do all kinds of good things for the state and beyond. Right. I mean, look what Sean's doing. He's global. Sean Strawbridge, he's doing things globally.
Yeah. What's happened at the Port of Corpus Christi since Sean got there is one of the most incredible economic development stories stories in the state's history. And frankly, it doesn't get enough attention. But yes, I completely agree with you. That port, that specific port, is so critical because of its proximity to the Eagle Ford and the Permian Basin. Mm-hmm. Such a crucial driver of our energy abundance in the United States. And it's all going through Corpus Christi. It's really fantastic story.
Speaking of Sarah, I listened to a guy yesterday who is German, but he's in the commodities market, a guy named Lars Schernikau, S-C-H-E-R-N-I-K-A-U. And he's written a book called Unpopular Truth. And he points out, because he was talking about the fossil fuels, oil, gas, and coal, and then going over to the renewables. And he had these very interesting maps of where the sun is not shining, ain't gonna much, and where the wind doesn't blow much, ain't gonna, and that it is a kind of a failed analytical exercise to say, oh, we're going to go from 3 or 4% global to 40%, because the natural environment doesn't do that. It was just very interesting. Just he was sort of frustrated. He said, if I talk to one person, I can get him to talk to me, but if it becomes cloud and crowd speak, it's all negative.
Right. What's the name of the book again? I'm going to have to talk to this guy.
It's called Unpopular Truth.
Unpopular Truth.
Okay. By a guy named Lars, and I think I got it right, Schernikau. He's German.
Okay. I'm going to look him up.
He's very interesting. The charts are unbelievable.
Well, it is. And you know, a great example of what you're talking about is Great Britain, mm-hmm. where they're building all this offshore wind and they're not really in a fairway, which is really prime location for wind. And it's going to be just billions and billions of dollars invested in an energy kind of boondoggle that isn't going to produce much industry. And we saw just this week them having to reactivate old retired coal plants just to keep the lights on because wind had dropped almost nothing on a couple of days over there. So all of this is so, there's so much waste happening in the energy space. And
think about the cost by the consumer. I mean, we talk at the Carbon Neutral Coalition about affordable, reliable, yes. You know, dispatchable energy. And if it's not dispatchable and if it's not affordable, then in some sense, you're going to see people's living standards actually decline.
Yeah.
And that's that's very sad.
And we're really even in danger of that happening in Texas if we don't get some more dispatchable backup generating capacity on our own grid. And I hope the legislature will deal with that in this session. But I know you're working on, the coalition is working with Representative Drew Darby,
right.
One of the great proponents of oil and gas industry, really over the last two decades in the legislature on a bill this session. Talk about what that bill would do.
It's House Bill 1158, and it really is to getting support for clean energy projects. And there's another bill that got filed by Representative Landgraf, which is about what I would call a property tax exemption for certain things. And so these two are sitting out there, and Drew Darby is wonderful. He's great out of San Angelo, and Landgraf is out of Odessa.
Yeah.
They really get it that you're going to have some things to incent the market. So what Corbyn has talked about is if your carbon capture for a ton is, you know, $130, $125, and if you get a federal, the 45Q, if you get $85, well, you close that gap. It used to be 50, but you still at the state level, because you do have this sort of looming presence from Wall Street and a looming presence from the feds, the present feds, that say, don't invest. And I talked to friends of mine in Midland, and they say that the credit market is dried up. So what we're trying to do with these bills, there's one we're looking at also as a franchise tax bill, another one about a liability bill. So we have these here, but it's meant to sort of say to all these people, we want to help you. We think this is important. And I think that both Representative Landgraf and Representative Darby are going to get good hearings on their bills.
Good. Well, that's very positive. I really like the incentivized way to go about this rather than forcing taxpayers to foot the bills for direct subsidies. To go the incentive route seems to make a whole lot more sense. And, you know, it's something that the state of Texas has been good at doing historically in the energy space, even with wind energy. You know, we've incentivized that. We're the great wind energy power in the United States, in Texas today. Another story that doesn't get enough attention, but But anyway, this is all so positive. And let's talk about energy security. I don't understand, and I wonder if you have some insights on why the climate lobby has such a hard time learning the very clear lessons that have that Europe has shown us over the last year since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and how Europe has had to scramble in this mad rush to secure liquefied natural gas cargoes from the United States and elsewhere to meet its just basic energy needs. Doesn't that all stem from the fact that they didn't have energy security in the first place?
Well, they had a weird energy security, mainly. Yeah. They were beholden to Russia. If you have, you know, Germany having 40% of its energy from their neighbor to the right, and if their neighbor starts barking at you, you want to back away from the teeth. Well, that's what happened when they all took a look. And, you know, the prior Ms. Merkel, she was very much in favor of close ties with Russia. She was born in, you know, East Berlin and over there. And so her background was different. England just made mistakes, and they got captured by the climate lobby. But when Ukraine's nuclear reactors were under assault, when its country was under assault, when it didn't have lights, all of a sudden the Baltic states, you know, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania took a look and said, oh my goodness. And then you have Finland, which has always been staring, you know, in that direction. In Sweden, they realized that the Europe that they knew was gone and was not coming back. And so they said, we have made a mistake. We have imperiled our citizens. And I would suggest to you that you're not hearing much from the climate lobby at this time saying, we've got to go back to wind. They're not saying it because it's not reliable, it's not affordable, and it's not dispatchable. And so I think it's been an extraordinarily important lesson. And I think that we're paying attention to it here. We had Winter Storm Uri, which was sort of our own version of, you know, Russia invading a Russian coal front. But it taught us something. And my husband and I are taking a look at maybe getting a generator. We've got one at the ranch. We have backup energy. We've had it for all over the ranch now for 40 years because things happen. And I think what Europe has told a lot of us is you got to watch out. You're going to have to do it. So Estonia is developing an LNG plant. Spain is developing an LNG facility because they want to get that on top of the Mediterranean so they can move energy around, which I think is great.
So I know in the Trump administration, you guys understood how important energy security is to national security. And I know you've probably been following the events at CERAWeek. It seems to me we're having a bit of an evolution in the administration's posture towards the oil and gas industry, particularly from Secretary Granholm, but John Podesta was also there and also made a couple of remarks that indicated an understanding of the need to maintain energy security. And I wonder if you're seeing a similar dynamic taking shape in the current administration.
Yeah, I think so. And I think Senator Manchin coming out to oppose a nominee for the Assistant Secretary of, you know, ASL and Land and Laura Daniel Davis, because of a leaked sub memo, which said, even though this will give us better security, we won't do it. And that was just a mind blowing thing for Manchin. And that's gotten a lot of play. And he's saying it is national security. If you can't turn on your lights, you can't have the heart lung machine working in a hospital. If you can't do any of that, you have put yourself in a very bad way. Now, I was surprised when just some months ago, the administration allowed, I forget which big player, to go ahead and deal with Venezuela again. Well, Venezuela is not a particularly reliable world player. But when you have Iran and Venezuela and other places saying it's okay to do this, Russia's been, you know, made a pariah, which is fine. But it is important. If we have cold winters, Europe was very lucky not to have very cold winters. Suppose they'd had really, really cold winters. All this is certainly prompting Finland to say overwhelmingly, we want to be in NATO. We want better support. We're going to go west. We don't trust east. And I'm hoping that the administration is truly paying attention to it.
I do too. I talked with Dan Yergin about a month ago, and he was very focused on the likelihood that Europe did get skate through with this mild winter this time, but it's still going to have a real problem obtaining the oil and natural gas it needs to get through the next two, not just next winter, but the one after that as well, the way things are shaping up. And it just all goes back to that fact that it had become so over-reliant on Russia for its energy needs. And here in the United States, the shale revolution really helped us become much more energy independent than we were. And carbon capture, this CCS, just seems to be a way to help us clean up, get the emissions out of our current system that we know has worked for a century. It just all seems to make so much sense, really.
I think that's the important story. We can have an energy secure future, if we go ahead and clean it up. What I find interesting, though, is that some people on the left would say the only good fossil fuel is a dead fossil fuel. I mean, that's, they really, if it's cleaned up, it's still not good. And I view that as being very anti folks on a limited income, folks that we really do need to pay attention to, who are not in, they're not riding around in fancy cars. But it is almost either or. I mean, I'm an all of the above energy person. I've got solar on the ranch. I've got wind on the ranch. I've got, generator on the ranch. I have all of those, which is great. I'm all of the above. But I would never say if you've cleaned up fossil fuels, it's still awful, awful. That would be wrong. Incorrect, but also it's a bad public policy. It's a terrible public policy.
Yeah, it really is. And for Texas specifically, we're so rich in the resource. Mm-hmm. Doesn't Texas produce more than half the oil and gas, the crude oil produced in the whole country right now?
Yeah, we're one of the major ones, obviously. We have been very supportive. You were right next door to Louisiana. You've got, of course, the Dakotas. You've got Haynesville, but you've got California, which has one of the largest reserves of gas, but they import about 2/3 of it because they won't go get it.
Yeah, it's crazy. A lot of that comes from Venezuela. In fact, a lot of the gasoline they use. So one of the things I also want to talk about real quick is when you were at the Interior Department, you did a lot of work, had a big focus on Alaska and ensuring Alaska was able to continue to exploit the resource that they have up there with this Willow project of ConocoPhillips coming up for approval. I wonder if you have an opinion on which way that should go.
Oh, I think it should be done. I mean, Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan are clearly pro-Alaska, and they're not polluters. They want to do it right. They want to do it safely. Alaska does need it. And I think that the administration, through their nominees, are showing that they really are going to be pretty hardcore. There was a road that Senator Murkowski wanted about 4 years ago, and then Secretary Sally Jewell said, no, the birds are more important than humans, so we can't get them out. There was in those two administrations, in the Obama administration and then in this one, there is a lack of interest in humans.
Yeah.
That's kind of surprising to me. I mean, the interior is natural resources. It's a lot of things. It's a lot of land, but these are life-saving things. If you can get energy reliably, safely, dispatchably to people, then they have a better life. They can absolutely make their lives better.
Yeah, and we're talking about potentially 180,000 barrels a day of production. That's a lot of oil to help refill the Trans-Alaska pipeline that is only about 40% capacity right now. So hope that decision goes the right way. We are running up against time. I can't thank you enough for doing this. I want to, before we go, though, be sure everyone knows where they can find the Carbon Neutral Coalition. Talk about where they can go to get more information on what y'all are doing.
Okay, www.carbonneutralcoalition.com. And it's Corbin Robertson is the head. I'm the chair of the advisory board. And we've got updated podcasts, updated videos, updated things. And one last thing that we're doing, David, we are actually engaged extensively in social media right now to get people in the capital to understand what's going on. We've got, you know, a couple of 100,000 clicks and people like this back and forth. So we're trying to do, and you know, like that, all of the above media, but it is the Carbon Neutral Coalition.
Fantastic. And before we go too, I just want to thank you again for all your service to Texas. I have such a great admiration for people that put themselves out there, seek election to these important offices. And I, as somebody who worked in that part of the world for 20 years, I understand the sacrifices that you have to make to do that. So thank you again for your service to Texas.
Hey, well, thank you, David. It's been a pleasure to be on here, and especially seeing the artwork in your office.
Okay. Thank you. And that's all for this episode. Thank you. Thanks to the viewers for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.